Welcome, guys.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, how we doing, John?
Wow, you're so handsome, Sailor Gary. I'm loving it, man.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Excellent. Great, and I'm doing well, just to answer your question. So I guess, you know, tell us a little bit about yourselves and where are you in the world today?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I'm Mike Evans. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Nifty Markets, parent company of Spirit Punks. I'm based up here in Lake Tahoe. We're dealing with a little bit of snow. Winter is kicking off in full swing. And yeah, happy to be here with you guys.
How's it going? Sailor Gary here. We're making some world-class memes and world-class alcohol up in the Sierra Foothills. And we're showcasing that bridge with Spirit Punks.
So for starters, I'm jealous. I'm sitting here in Southern California where it's actually pretty warm today and very windy. So I might have to pay you guys a visit up in Tahoe and go. I assume you're snowboarders. Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, we like
I'll trade you though. Right, it's been a little cold. I've been waking up to nine degree weather, so that's chilly.
That's cold. At least you got snow though. That's good. So yeah, exactly. I mean, let's back up a bit. I mean, you know, I heard about you a little bit from Milan, talking, you know, from DGH, and he was just bragging about you guys. He was so impressed. And, you know, I guess to go back, you know, how did you get started in the alcohol business? Like, I guess before we get into Spirit Punks and all that, let's go back on your history. How did this happen?
Yeah, I'll let Sailor Gary take that one.
I'll jump in. John Dorfman here, CEO of Spirit Punks. Sailor Gary's our kind of ape spokesperson for the metaverse, kind of launching the meme side of our brands. We have a world-class distillery up in the Sierra Foothills. We have a flagship Web 2 brand. My distillery partner and I met doing some ethanol research. We met at an acoustic physics lab, and we were doing some ethanol research under a handful of different contracts, some DARPA contracts, some DoD contracts. Specifically, the ethanol was under some DoD contracts. We helped to develop some fundamental technology to target some very elusive trace compounds in distilled spirits. And then after a handful of serendipitous events, we were able to acquire licensing over that tech. We thought that, you know, making some of the best, you know, purest stuff in the world would sell itself. But of course, at the end of the day, it's a lot of marketing and branding, but it's kind of how we got started. We launched 4 years ago. Our flagship's called South Fork. We're up mostly Northern California, but we're in about 1,100 locations across the state. Then we basically were thinking about making memes. We were talking about relevance in kind of our specific sector of the kind of physical product world. Basically, thought about, you know, how we could make a meme authentic. If we were thinking about doing some Doge vodka, perhaps kind of in the right around the original height winter of 2020, and wanted to make that authentic if we could, you know. And so we started looking to seeing if we could accept cryptocurrency. There wasn't a lot of infrastructure, especially with alcohol side of things. It has a couple more compliance layers you got to get through. But we started looking at, you know, like appending digital art. You know, NFTs were going off. You know, we said, hey, you know, we could bring in some artists from the community, maybe pick a nonprofit we care about, you know, kind of just change relevance and just directionality in general. And like, think about how you create relevance in a sector and consumer packaged goods. But the second we started really kind of looking at how we would go about, you know, appending NFTs to physical goods and what NFTs really were on a technology layer, our minds just started to be blown over and over week after week. And you're like, this is really going to change. You know, NFTs are really going to be, to us, you know, some of the fundamental backbones of what the most powerful CRMs, the most powerful advertising tools, you know, that will exist 5-10 years from now. And we just basically said, hey, if we don't really start putting, you know, putting some pieces together, we're just going to like abandon our boring Web 2, you know, distillery here to go pursue, you know, actual infrastructure builds. But
So everything you just said, I think we could unpack over the following, you know, 3 or 4 hours. But, it's like it's super interesting to break down something that you're talking about. You guys first focused on your craft and you became experts at making spirits before anything else. And I think that's pretty important. And you also talked about, alcohol largely is a commoditized space. It's about marketing. It's about branding. It's about distribution. It's about all of these major things that are very difficult, a lot more difficult than most understand.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of layers.
I was reading that you guys were voted the number one craft distiller in America. Is that true?
Yeah,
How did that come about?
We just, the technology is very robust. So we do win medals in basically, we have won medals in every competition we've entered, which is, 38, 39 competitions, Gold in New York, Gold in San Francisco, Wine Enthusiast, top 10 of 2020. But you get nominated. It was USA Today's number one craft vodka distillery we just got in September. So
congrats. That's no
more,
that's
more,
huge,
more marketing, more marketing tool. At the end of the day, sure, you got to get people to try it. You have to make it available. You have to have the distribution to do that. You have to kind of bake in, the kind of margins to be able to, build up in store. If you're a spirits company and you're trying to like double your volume every year, you're locking in, huge amounts in inventory every kind of cycle, which is, other weird considerations given our background wasn't specific CPG, 5 years ago when, we were working in the lab essentially.
So you guys are like are scientists. You're figuring all this stuff out. You figure out how to make great product, and you're kind of learning marketing along the way. Where you were like, hey, we need to do this with Web3. I mean, it's like, wait, that's completely over here. What was that light bulb that went off that said, we got to do this?
I mean, for us, we're excited to have kind of taken something we helped develop at bench scale and like bring it to our version of commercialization. But at the end of the day, the value proposition that Web3 really provides for and enables is it's monumental. It's a fundamental like generational, paradigm shift in what's going to be possible for humanity, in 10 years from now, and to like wake up and build on that, it's powerful, it's really where our head's at, whether it's on the consumer packaged goods side or it's on, kind of value distribution for nonprofits, for better CRMs for nonprofits, there's, millions of layers in like of Web3. But for, I think Mike and I both really agree that like, unlike any other layer of the internet, like the value distribution is going to go to the end users, systematically eliminating middlemen from transactions and doing so confidently is just such a powerful, powerful notion. If you can help build that infrastructure or turn light bulbs on to inspire other people to build that infrastructure, at the end of the day, like the sooner it's built, the sooner we all get to realize it. It's an incredible.
Just to touch on that a little bit further, my background's more in PR communications, brand building, storytelling. And I was involved in kind of the early stages of the distillery launch and build, and then have worked on some other projects in the meantime. And then it was almost 2 years ago now where John and I were sitting down talking and saying, where is all this going to go? Where do we've been kind of long time just blockchain enthusiasts, from investors, affiliates, have seen the technology and where it's going to go and just said, the implications are just incredible. And it was about 2 years ago where we said, we feel like we missed 2016 to start working in this space. We feel like we missed 2018 to start working in this space. And it was like no time like the present to try to dive in headfirst. You feel like you missed the wave, but in reality, it's still so on the front end of where all this goes. And so that was where this idea kind of came about initially to say, we had these fun conversations about like, how do you put memes on products and just play with consumer attention? And then it really turned into like, how do you append this digital technology to physical products? How do you create new levels of access by holding digital tokens, which are some of the cool, fun infrastructure pieces that we've been working on building? And so that's where the idea for, Spirit Punk started to come about, which is all these more Web3 centric products that really are enabled by this technology from a foundational level. And so we have the two different companies now, which is Nifty Markets, which is really focused on that side of the build, the infrastructure build for the actual blockchain NFT components here. And then we have the traditional distillery. And we said, you know, if we're going to work on pairing physical products at the end of the day, the most obvious place to start is, you know, with something we already do and already do well. And it's fun to talk to people and, you know, everyone sees the products and they say, oh, this is really interesting. Like, who makes it? You're like, oh, well, we make it, you know, and that really helps with kind of everything we do, because we can say on a baseline level, this is also a really good high quality product. It's not like we're just taking, you know, taking fun brands that we come up with and slapping them on something. You know, it's really trying to pair all these things together and actually build a holistic, you know, holistic project company at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's fascinating. My family works in the beer industry as well, and it's like the marketing side is a never ending expense, and it's tough to keep it going. And I think what's really interesting is the Web3 side of this. I mean, you now have a community rallying behind your product, and they end up not just doing the marketing for you. They probably create all sorts of new opportunities that don't exist. Such as Sailor Gary right now, right? I mean, so I guess what are those opportunities that you're seeing? Like, you know, so you've got, say, Doge Vodka. So you guys just recently, maybe let's talk about Doge Vodka. You guys launched Doge Vodka, and it's beautiful, by the way, in a box. It's amazing. Love it. No, lots of people that would want that. So what are some of the, I guess, how did that start? And what are some of the opportunities that you see coming out of that about really making this much more natively about crypto?
Yeah, John, go for it. And then I'm happy to jump in on that as well.
Yeah. You know, it's both. I mean, we, you know, I kind of gave you a little background on kind of how, you know, our minds started to get blown on NFTs and why we've kind of found it so inspiring. We wanted to do a Doge Vodka. I was talking to one of the head buyers for spirits at one of the big box retailers in California. And I was talking about relevance. They brought my main flagship product into all their stores in Northern California, which is a great windfall for a small startup. And I said, you know, but how do I make this track? You know, we're not 10 generations of, you know, craft distillers here. You know, it's not like I really want to make more vodka drinkers at the end of the day. I don't really care if you drink vodka, I probably make it better. If you don't drink vodka, like, don't drink vodka. You know, and so if you're saying, you know, with Doge Vodka, you're saying, you know, we can make memes, we can make it authentic, but we really want to pair it with community. You know, we want to show what Web3 can do. You know, you want to say, I want to accept, you know, the right currencies when I'm selling the alcohol. I want to, you know, have some real directionality or capture the ethos of what I'm talking about. It's the original meme coin. It also has an ethos of do only good every day. You know, so we decided to pair up with something we care about, you know, to not do a names for gains campaign, but to like say, hey, we're trying to raise, you know, a bunch of money in the process. You know, and you learn a lot. You learn a lot building in the Web3 space. You know, there's things that traction, there's things that don't traction. And what's really been kind of profound is that we've really identified in the last 8 months of doing this, that Web3 isn't just a technology layer to showcase value proposition. It's also a cultural revolution at the same time, you know, good and point. To really kind of capture that mesh and to capture that resonance, you know, is both important, you know, as important as helping showcase legacy Web2 brands, you know, the tool sets, but also identify that there will be fully Web3 brands that are born out of the cultural element of it, you know, and they'll be different historically, you know, and so it's fun to, you know, being huge blockchain enthusiasts ourselves and being, you know, involved in both the art side, you know, not just we get to, you know, do as much art as we want, but, you know, being involved in the community at large, you know, you want to see, you know, feel that resonance. You want to curate products, you know, for your community, you know, in a different way. And it's kind of the feedback loop. It's like that, you know, what's so exciting about the community element, you know, which for us was, you know, it was kind of secondary. You know, we've been talking about blockchain and the financial implications of Bitcoin for a decade. And it was always a really kind of dry thing. You know, you're yelling at your friends and family and your relatives about how this is going to be the future. And, you know, the use cases are limited. And then, you know, all of a sudden there's, you know, GMs every morning, you know, and you wake up and people aren't, you know, bitching about politics online. You're just hitting your GM waves and, you know, people are motivating to get out and keep building. And, you know, so it's been interesting to, you know, build through the cycles here, but we're here for the haul. You know, 10 year blockchain is where it's at. I think NFTs are such a mind-boggling, robust, powerful tool that I could go on this run-on sentence forever on it.
Yeah. No, and just to kind of, you know, echo all of that and touch on it a little bit further, there's kind of been this really interesting thing that we started to see from like a consumer engagement standpoint on how, A, there's just the kind of meme-inspired products, and you're saying, how can I just capture attention with that? And so that's something we've been exploring a little bit. And then from the actual technology layer, the piece that we've really been kind of playing with and looking at is saying, how can I create consumer engagement cycles by saying you get access exclusively to certain products if you're a member of our club, so to speak, you hold our NFT, you hold our token. And so that's kind of how the release of Doge Vodka works, the founder's release of Doge Vodka works. And then the other side of that we've started looking at is how can you, again, append these digital tokens to physical products? And the thesis behind that is really to say, you know, you look at Nike and Artifact and you look at all these big companies that are working on this right now. But the thesis behind this that I think everyone can probably agree with is that in the next 5 to 10 years, every collectible or luxury product will have a digital asset associated with it in some way, whether that's a collectible twin or, you know, a tool for verification to, you know, make sure something's authentic. You know, I think the watch industry is like a huge, you know, a great poster child for that, where like the secondary watch market is like 10x, if not, I don't actually know what the number is, but it's massively larger than the primary market for watches, and the forgery and fraud that goes on in the secondary market is just insane. And so, you know, using that as like a verification tool to say this watch is actually real, made by the manufacturer, how do you keep those things tied together to actually use that technology in that way? And so that's something we've been playing with in terms of just how do you append these NFTs to physical products in the right way, whether it's, you know, simply through a QR code and you know, mint the NFT based off the QR code that it, you know, wherever it brings you, or through NFC technology where you actually just tap your phone to something and it pops up, you know, through a near field communicator. And so there's kind of a really interesting engagement cycle that you can start to explore with how people buy products to say, if you're a holder of this token, you get access, but then this product has a new token that gives you access to something else. So obviously we're really on the front end of this. And I think from a consumer standpoint, it's not easy. There's still a big level of friction there that needs to be broken down, but it's just to see where it could go and where it will go to, you know, how do you create that loop of like creating excitement for the next thing in buying collectible products and buying luxury products is something I think we'll see play out in the next 5 to 10 years. And it's something that at least personally, I'm really excited about.
So on top of being, you know, masters at your craft of making spirits, you're also supporting a authenticated resale market with the technology that you're building.
And yeah, that's the idea for sure.
It's amazing. And how far do you think that extends? Does that extend? Do you guys see yourselves becoming a technology platform on one side, and it's like almost another thing? I mean, are you just going to extend this to more types of different alcohol that you'll manufacture? How do you see that evolving?
Ideally, it becomes a platform that is, you know, we built, you know, this really fun tool that is this Shopify redemption for, you know, on-chain redemption. When you mint our token, redeems on chain, actually changes the metadata of the token itself and gives you a one-time checkout link to buy, you know, to buy Doge Vodka. And so one side of that is actually building the technology, but again, we're not, you know, we're not engineers, we're not developers at the end of the day.
We can't build all the tools, you know, this is going to come down to, at least in the short term, curation, because, You know, there's a lack of tool sets. There's a lack of kind of universal infrastructure. And there's actually a lack of like the idea of the value proposition in the first place. You know, you need that. We see the need for the tools because we understand the value that's enabled by the tools. But a lot of brands don't see the value idea yet. And so they're not asking for the tools, you know, and that's not driving enterprise in. And without somebody tinkering the space, there won't be any kind of regulatory structure to bring, you know, the big money in. So you need these cycles to go. You know, you need to say, hey, I'm going to create build a protocol that has NFTs on physical packages, release it, you know, through commercial, you know, standard distribution chains. So this was our original Web2 side of the bridge. We released this last November. It has a Humane Society NFT under this peel to mint sticker. And we released that through our traditional Web2 distribution channels, 1500 piece collection. That will get you some gamified price tiering on our spirits marketplace. It'll also get you, it's not signed yet, but it'll also get you access to the Tahoe Jazz and Brew Fest that the Humane Society puts on every year that it's a partner with. So you're talking about like, how can I do some fun, cool things while I'm showcasing what the value should look like for of Web3? You know, if I want, you know, real directionality in nonprofit, you know, contributions, like that alone is super cool. And like, you know, what the Giving Block is doing to like build some of the back end, five, 10 years from now, like if, you know, 1% of the planet, you know, they've done some great stuff, but, you know, it doesn't feel real anymore. And 5 years from now, if I'm giving 1% or 2% of an additional margin by mandate, like I should get to choose where that goes. You know, whether it's for clean oceans, whether it's for curated IRL events, whether for it's, you know, some artisty royalty, and I should be able to track it down on chain. Do I have to go track it down? Of course not, but I should be able to. You know, I should be able to have the warm, snuggy feeling of saying, I know that this is going where it's supposed to go. And like, that's what, you know, it's those subtleties that are like so valuable to just highlight. And so we're saying, we know we're early, you know, we know we have an established vertical. You know, to be able to show something, like we might as well be. We kind of have to, you know. And the idea is that, you know, while we're doing this, we're in a position to be able to curate a lot of these tools. We're able to, you know, ultimately the goal is to help other brands and other verticals be able to do this well, you know, and say, hey, given what your product is, you know, you might not want to pair with a Web3 artist. You might want to, you're a wine company, you might want to take, you know, like minerality data or, you know, supply chain data and put that on your bottles. Maybe consumers want that. Maybe you like put your brands in a DAO structure and say, okay, what do you want? You know, we've come up with some memes. We've come up with some nonprofit partnerships. You know, do you want better, you know, sustainable packaging? Do you want, you know, us to pool money together to rent a yacht in Miami for the 200 people with the most?
Yep.
But yeah, again, John, bring the question full circle to your point, where we really see Nifty Markets, again, the parent company, is the player that's building these tools and curating these tools for other brands. And to echo John, really what Spirit Punks is a showcase for all those tools at the end of the day. You know, we can build a fun club around all these brands and spirits that we're making, and we want to build cool products for the community that are representative of the communities that we love. But at the end of the day, we want to show how all these tools, when it comes to bridging physical and digital together, can work, and how other brands can actually implement that technology in the long run.
It's amazing. And that was just a bottle of GM, is that right?
Yeah. It's for the homies in the metaverse.
I love it. I love it. You're showcasing. You know, I still got this that you handed me this at the LA Blockchain Summit. I got my Bored Vodka right here, nice. Which is this is your Bored Ape right here.
That's Sailor Gary, right? He's
love it.
He's his own.
And that's
thing.
On that bottle. So this is just a taste of that one. Love it. Love it. So I guess, you know, it's super interesting. You know, I've worked with vodka brands in the past, even I think I mentioned Kettle One. Like I've worked with Kettle One in the past, and like. Not just them, but like you look at the industry, it's about It's about sales and distribution, and you know, marketing is sometimes viewed as an expense in pursuit of sales and distribution. It's you know, it's corporate, and it's like, and especially the larger it gets, the worse it gets, right? It's just like, yeah, it's just all numbers, numbers and product and how much can you scale and all that. And it's like, you guys really took a different approach here relative to most of the industry. And it's like, you know, you've mentioned community, so supporting causes. I mean, these are like, you know, different metrics than what was our quarterly revenue. And it's in a space that's largely commoditized. You're expected to have great alcohol. Like it's table stakes. And so it's sort of like, how do you, I guess, what caused that? Was it a competitive thing that you guys saw this is our opportunity because no one's doing it? Or, you know, it's interesting when I hear you speak so differently from the people that I've personally even spoken with in the past. What drove that?
We like a good cocktail, but I mean, we really want to build something that like is that we're, you know, I don't call it our generation or whatever, but like, we just like want to build something meaningful, you know? And to me, to Mike, you know, it's not converting a million more people to drinking more alcohol. Nobody needs it. You know, it's like, if we can make, you know, some fusel reductions, you know, at scale, like that could be an upgrade for what you're like kind of standard getting across the board. And like, that's cool. But at the end of the day, like, you know, probably nobody should, you know, be drinking a lot of alcohol anytime. So, yeah, you know, it's like, and if, you know, we're going to work hard and, you know, cause we're both pride of workmanship, you know, type people, you know, everyone here at our companies are, you know, you want to feel good about what you're building. And so, you know, if we see, you know, what real value Web3 brings, like, I want that now, you know, I want it like, I want DMV issued NFTs for driver's license. So when my girls go to the bar in 20 years or whatever, the creepy bouncer can verify they're 21 without knowing their home address at the same time. You know, it's just,
please.
It's obvious. Yes. It's obvious. It's possible. You know, there's just some things that you're saying, you know, hey, if the IRS is going to go audit, you know, some major hedge funds or audit, you know, some market makers who are mandated to, you know, put in certain collateral or capitalize certain things a certain way, put all that information on a private blockchain, you know, walk in, say, hey, you're being audited, hand over the USB, we'll audit it, we'll be back. You either did or didn't do it. Even just like the idea of like mandated timestamping, you know, that is discoverable on a mutable ledger is so intuitive. And it's like, we all can see it at our, you know, you go to a blockchain convention and you're all like the same people in the same room, you know, who all get it. But like, you really need, you know, the onboarding of both sides. You know, you need to show people what that bridge looks like, what those value systems are. Commerce is a great spot to do that. You know, consumer packaged goods are a great spot to do it. You have to obviously get through, like, your grandmother never needs to know what a Web3 wallet is. She shouldn't have to. You know, you don't have to know what TCP/IP is to send email. You know,
that's always a fun tangent that I have with people. Like, I've had a ton of friends over the last year, you know, particularly when we were at the height of kind of the NFT run. You know, friends coming up to me saying, you know, what do I need to know about NFTs? Like, what, you know, what can you tell me? And I'm like, unless you actually really want to put your head down and you really care, and like, I can, you know, I'll give them the 5-minute spiel on it. But like, unless you actually really find this interesting, like, you don't need to know how they work. You know, who knows how the internet actually works from a foundational level? Not the majority of people, for sure. But we use it every day. You know, this is our lifeline to the whole world, for better or worse sometimes, I suppose. But, you know, the way this technology will actually influence and affect people's lives in the long run, you know, hopefully for better, you know, in the best ways possible. You know, people don't need to know how it works from a foundational level. It's up to people like us to build it and, you know, make it valuable for, you know, the general population. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when I send a text message or when I Google something on my phone or when I go post something on Twitter, like, I don't need to know how the back end works as long as I can get value out of it and I can give value to other people through it. And I think that's where this goes from a you know, foundational level again.
Kind of like drinking high quality vodka without thinking about a blockchain.
Yeah.
Right.
So what, or I'll say, I'll do a plug here, or an analytics platform that you can just kind of use it and learn how community matters across crypto. another topic would be like, you know, you want to support causes, and you keep mentioning that, like, you guys are supporting the ASPCA, I guess. How did that come about, and how does that all work, and how do you see that proceeding with your products?
Yeah, for sure. I'll touch on it for a second, then John jump in. But really where we saw this from a front end was, we kind of always had this conversation about, and to John's point about, you know, we really actually want to just build things that we care about at the end of the day, and actually support causes that we care about, because we're good people. We like to think we're good people, and we sit here and we say we actually give a shit about the world, and we actually give a shit about where, you know, where our dollars go. You know, I don't want to support forced labor camps in China through my products. Like, that's just horrendous. You're like, how can we as a society not support things like that, that are actually doing harm to the world and doing harm to people? And so we started to have this conversation about, you know, just in general, how can you just support causes through what we're doing, was kind of the initial baseline of it. And then we really saw this in just the incredible implications of particularly NFT royalties as a way for no overhead new donation revenue for nonprofits. And so you say, at the point of sale of a product, or at the point of sale of a mint or whatever, if you could have a nonprofit, just their wallets associated for 1%, 2%, whatever it is, as soon as an NFT trades hands or is minted or a product is sold, they could just see the benefit without ever having to do anything, without ever having to put money into marketing something or put money into, you know, pushing the value proposition behind it. They can just create these whole new channels of revenue and donation with no overhead. And so that was kind of where it came from initially. And that was why, you know, we wanted to say, A, on the point of sale of this, you know, the mints that we're doing and the products that we're selling, you know, give benefit to a nonprofit partner. But really what we're trying to do through this is actually help onboard these organizations, which we've worked really closely with the Giving Block. They're incredible, to, you know, coordinate with people like the ASPCA and the Truckee Tahoe Humane Society to say, how can we help you, bring you into this space? Because you're one of the sectors that can see the most long-term benefit for this technology in the long run.
So you guys are onboarding new customers, which are also technically now users. I don't know, normally equate a user with the buying of a spirit. You now know someone's wallet address. You now are bringing them into kind of the fold. And I guess, what do you do with that? Like, from a community perspective, I'm referring to, like,
I mean, for,
do you now
for
have
us,
a Discord that's gated, or like, how do you see that evolving?
For us, when we were launching our local product, which we, you know, the premium vodka, which we did with the Humane Society, we had worked with the Humane Society on a dozen different events in our Web2 world, you know, but instead of just like bringing our Web2 brand in, we wanted to say, what if you just had your own line? What if, instead of, you know, me trying to take South Fork over to New York and Florida over the next 5 years, and the traditional brand build play of big alcohol, which is written, you know what that looks like, it's expensive and it's well executed marketing. What if the ASPCA or the Humane Society, or, you know, just had their own super high quality product lines, whether it's in, you know, and like, instead of saying, you know, someone else is the infrastructure piece, but, you know, instead of saying you guys have to get into the clothing business, you just have a line that benefits you directly or indirectly. What if you don't want exposure to the physical side, but you could capture user data over people who support your product in physical products? You know, like, what does the CRM mean to the Humane Society? It means we have a captured audience of either meme lovers, vodka lovers, or animal lovers who like alcohol between San Francisco and Tahoe, who also wanted to support the Humane Society, because we're basically standing in grocery stores selling this meme alcohol, NFTs, to old people and saying, here's, there's a free NFT on the back of this, and it might have some longer utility. But to them, you're saying, hey, stop sending me mailers. you know, use this consumer data. How do I re-engage this customer who's already engaged in my product, who I already know, you know, enjoys maybe alcohol or animals again, and invite them to local real events? You know, like, what does this mean on a localized community level? What does this mean for other institutions? You know, for, it's just such a powerful, like, engagement tool and CRM tool and cultural tool at the same time. You know, like, our customers are both like alcohol consumers, but they're also like nonprofits who want to like kind of capture this value on the other side, you know. And if I can onboard, you know, more nonprofits to understand this value proposition, like, that's super cool, you know, to me. I'd rather go do that than go do a golf nonprofit for my Web2 alcohol brand, even though they're all supporting, you know, good causes when we do those, but, or a festival, like.
And then just to touch on the community phone, and again, even more, you know, really what we want to be able to communicate to people upon the purchasing of a product is to say, you know, this is supporting something that is doing good just by you even being here, just by you being involved, by you minting a token, by you buying a product. We want people, and I feel like, you know, this is where we'd love to see the norm be in the years to come. We want people to know that this is, that you just being a consumer is doing good in the process. And that's kind of the underlying foundation of this side of the coin here, to say, you know, as soon as you opt in, it does good. And then from the other side of that, where, you know, with Spirit Punks, what we, you know, want to kind of see and build is to say, when you have the community behind it and you have token holders, you know, to really kind of treat it like a DAO or a DAC, you know, a decentralized autonomous community, to say, you know, we're going to do a product for, you know, that's World of Women branded with our assets on it. And it's going to support X, you know, it could support A, B, and C nonprofit. What do you guys want to see it support? And that's what this enables, people to actually go vote on where these dollars go. You know, what does this support when you're a part of the community? What do you want to see it support? And so, A, you can have people actually, you know, vote on and be involved in what products or brands are being created on one side. But then you can have people say, this is what I want to have that product do, you know, and maybe it's not supported nonprofit. Maybe it's a completely another outside of the box idea that someone has. But again, that's just what this technology layer does. It's what it allows us to do.
I love it. Not only are you, like, at a minimum, if someone's engaging with that community, you know that they've either engaged with the actual physical product or went all the way to buy it. And it's like, to give them, like, it's like most products kind of can't do it. If it's just all about sales, it just doesn't really jive. There's nothing to decide, but you're like letting them figure out the future of not only the product, but also the causes that surround that product. I think that's genius. That's honestly, that's a really great idea. It also brings up the topic that is so, like, it's like a circular topic that just keeps happening, and people throw the word utility around with NFTs. And you know, we've been in this environment of, I'll call it marginal utility. We've seen some cool use cases followed by the next sentences. It's going to be awesome in the future. Like, but not yet. We're getting there. But like, when you look at NFTs, now you guys are genuinely trying to do this kind of real world bridge with NFTs. And in a sense, it's an on-ramp, right? It's an on-ramp for people that may have not even knew what the term was before they bought a bottle of vodka. Which is kind of a trip when you think about it.
A lot of people probably bought the bottle of vodka. Our mint rate from the grocery store sales is like 4-5%.
Wild.
And like, it's a Matic NFT, free to mint. But, you know, it just kind of, and I'm,
so
you know,
someone mints that and it's only one time mint on that one bottle.
Yep. QR to mint, QR to single mint, 1500 different QR codes. We manually printed them off, like,
to a point of sale CRM opportunity every single time a bottle is sold.
Yeah, it's circular. I mean, you can sell a bottle that has, you know, a NFT that is then token gated for you to buy the next product, and that's the only way to do it. You're like, you can put NFCTs in the tag that like have certain metadata before you break this non-powered circuit, and then it upgrades the metadata. You could have it custodianed in the NFC. You could have it mint from the NFC. So you have this like, just, I mean, what it's your mind, if you're like had spent any time in commerce, you're just like, holy, it's like, it's nauseating, you know, how much gamification there is possible, you know. And it's not like we're going to sit here and spend the decade building all these gamified tools for commerce itself, you know, but we want to really put this together and like, you know, show what we can, you know, inspire other people and like help build the smooth ramps. Right now the ramps are terrible, you know, and we're not, you know, customer user experience gurus either. You know, we're like, hey, if we could do this and put it together and do it this time, not scalably, but, you know, kind of show how, you know, how you could scale this well. Like that's as important as, you know,
that's a fun joke that I always like to come back to. We were at an event at the Quantum Space in LA, and one of the founders of Quantum was doing a talk, and he was like, just play around with shit. He's like, do some things that don't scale. And we're just sitting back here laughing because we're like physically appending QR stickers to bottles and just you know, nudging each other and just laughing in the back. And it really is the case. It's, you know, we have to kind of take the ecosystem for what it is right now, and that not all of the you know, ramps or the bridges to say what this does look like in 5 years or 10 years are really clear. And it's up to us to just throw things at the wall and see what does stick, see what will stick. And then, you know, get consumer, you know, community feedback, and then say, okay, that worked, this didn't, let's tweak it, let's try something else. And I think we're all just in a, you know, the whole ecosystem is in a place right now where it just is our responsibility to try and iterate and fail and do it again.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So you guys are tinkering, trying to figure out what the right model is. And there's, I mean, you guys have a authentication mechanism, a CRM mechanism. There's so, and on top of a really great product, like, I guess let's put our like future goggles on here. Where does the space look in 5 years? And, you know, how do you guys see yourselves evolving in it?
I think definitely to what I was saying in terms of just, I think every collectible and luxury product will have a digital token tied to it in some way. How that actually looks and what those bridges look like remains to be seen, and how your general, you know, individual goes about operating a MetaMask wallet and how that all looks, you know, I think that remains to be seen. But I think we can without a doubt say that that's a thing where I touch my phone to this bottle and I get my digital token collectible or verification. I think there's a lot of levels of friction. I think we're here and this is all the friction, and we need to figure out how to completely eliminate that in the next 5 years. But I think that's where it goes, at least on the physical products, you know, physical product side of things for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, if you're a brand, like, and you have the easier hard for your end user to capture, you know, the NFT piece, I mean, obviously you want more throughput. But if you're a brand and you're putting a physical product out in the world and you have like a CRM opportunity, like some data point capture opportunity, like, it's just naive to think you wouldn't take it. If you can get that cost down to, you know, a cent or 10 cents or, you know, on really well encrypted NFTs, you know, maybe a buck 50, if you're buying in bulk on physical merch, physical shoes, glasses, watches, you know, why wouldn't you? You know, you really have all these tools to re-engage with customers, like both at point of sale, but afterwards. You can have like a special sale that's token gated with an NFT you got on a physical product. You have to go to a spot in the metaverse, and then you have a pop-up store in the metaverse that sends new physical products with new NFTs. You know, you're like, what are brands going to look like? You know, obviously legacy brands want to like jump in here also, but like the loyalty communities that will be built in Web3 brands will be unrivaled.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost funny we're having this conversation. I mean, look at Nike, right? Was it totally. Was it yesterday? I don't even know what day it is anymore.
Yeah,
I think it
was yesterday. Hard to keep track. Within the last couple of days. Yeah,
the last couple of days. Yeah, I mean, like look at what they're doing. Also with Polygon, and it's like there's this. It's interesting because I think that we look at this as like there's this massive opportunity to scale this, and I think that there's another topic that you may not hear so much related to NFTs, but it's around transparency. And I think if what the last week has taught us with, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts just on the last week, because it's been absolutely wild. I think we've been online 10 hours over the last week, doing spaces and all this stuff. But like over the weekend.
What happened last week?
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing happened. You know, it's funny. Since I saw you guys at LA Blockchain Summit, another year of activity has happened.
Yeah, it turns out.
In
that's
2 weeks.
That's par for the course, though. That's just how this goes.
But this is special. This is special. Right. And it's brought up the topic of, he who shall not be named, causing all sorts of issues in our space. But should those issues even be possible? And if we were fully transparent as a space, would it be possible? And if there was technology in place that really mandated transparency and didn't allow otherwise, it wouldn't be possible. So I'd just be curious what your guys' thoughts are, what you've learned and seen over the last week with that one exchange, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing that I've really taken away from it, and then I think this, everyone should be talking about, particularly to people that aren't in the space. And there's a few people that have really put out some great content on it, but Blau was someone in particular that was talking about, mm-hmm. This whole thing that happened really had nothing to do with the actual underlying technology of distributed ledgers and blockchain. It really was a human error and a centralized institution error and an overleveraged company, that didn't have liquidity available. And so all these dominoes fall. And so really it's kind of an interesting thing where, we've gone, the whole space has gone back and forth on like, what does regulation look like? What should it look like? How should people be able to do certain things? And the reality is that it needs some level of regulation, at least on that institutional level, because otherwise things like this will continue to happen. And we've seen it, this is just because it happened, in crypto, this is an age old story that's happened to financial institutions for the last, 50 years since the stock exchange was around. And since large banks were around, we saw runs on banks in the 20s. And, mm-hmm. So I think that's really kind of one of the interesting takeaways for me is like this technology is actually trying to solve what happened here. And where, there's a bunch of things that I'm still not clear on and how I actually feel about it. And, even my understanding of some underlying pieces of it here. But I think what happened again was just like, If this technology works in the right way, in the way it should, blockchain technology, distributed ledger technology, these things shouldn't actually happen in the long run. This is what it's trying to prevent in so many ways. And so I thought that was just a really interesting piece to kind of try to dissect out of it. And I think to anyone who's, anyone who's talking to your general, your brother, your friend, your colleague, whatever, who's not involved in this space, it says, oh, crypto's a scam. Like, I think that is the message that we need to really be pushing and communicating to say this wasn't a result of this technology not working. This was a result of human error and centralized institutions that were overleveraged and played their hands wrong.
I think it really comes down to the philosophy of regulation at the end of the day. It's you have some real kind of systemic problems with level playing fields that blockchain both addresses and creates problems for a lot of people who are writing some of the rule sets here, but I think at the end of the day you really need a regulatory playing field that's normalized and standardized, and I think that's probably what the next 40 years look like for blockchain. You have some mass effects, the brain drain coming out of the US as a result of just really crap, really, non-specific regulatory standards, and like just really archaic approaches to how this is all built. You need a couple cycles of this to like create understanding, to create, the necessary pieces to come together. But you have, you have two sides of a like an NFT. You have the executable code and you have the end user agreement. And, the end user agreement, what Bored Ape did or Yuga Labs did with the IP, it's brilliant. It's revolutionary for artistry. But until you move that over to executable code, how that IP is actually transferred, how this is actually decided in different jurisdictions, level out the jurisdictional playing field, for like a global standard of how crypto can and should be, or you move it all over to like unstoppable code that we all, you know, iterate. You know, that's where it needs to go. You know, you're saying I need people to build infrastructure to mandate, you know, people build it wrong or, you know, incorrectly or not, you know, half baked essentially. And then that will force kind of the regulatory bodies to kind of put better guidance, which will then allow, you know, bigger enterprise to enter the space because they'll have better, you know, expectation on their ROI. You know, they're, you know, celebrities aren't going to jump into exchanges backed or, you know, otherwise probably for the next, you know, decade here because of, you know.
I'm kidding.
I find it funny. It's like they went after Kim Kardashian while SBF, I guess I said his name, was playing this game. Wild. While donating to politicians and hanging out with the regulators themselves.
Yeah, there's some underlying stuff with all that is, you know, I don't lean towards being a conspiracy theorist in general and what all that looks like, but he's supposedly like the second largest DNC donor, you know, in history, which is just crazy, you know, just to extrapolate the implications of that is like, you know, he should be in prison for the rest of his life. And you're like, will he? Probably not, you know, depending on what he can do to actually recover funds for customers and investors and so on and so forth. But it's just, there's some weird stuff on all those levels.
I think very long-term that, you know, blockchain will help everyone force people who are making the rules to be more accountable for them. You know, because you have these immutability layers, you have these potential audibility layers. It's just really explaining, you know, how we move information onto these ledgers. You know, tell us the truth, you know, or like make it discoverable. And you're like, you have to move that to executable code. Obviously, like how information is verified going onto a ledger is always challenging, but the timestamp piece of it, I think, is on a base layer, on, you know, a single point, is just so valuable. Like, you do it or don't, check it in or check it out.
You know, how what you guys are doing, how it relates to what we were just talking about is interesting, because you have a, you know, there's a cause element of a purchase. And what we just are experiencing now over the last week or two here is someone that was supporting causes that went to people we know which politicians that went to. We know which causes that supported those politicians, but it just sort of gets lost. And where did those donations come from? It was probably customer funds, probably, you know, and like, where did that go? And it's like out in thin air. And I think that's honestly, it's kind of a typical scenario for people supporting causes. And if you look at how corporations donate, it's really not transparent. And I know that there's a lot of entities working on this in crypto right now that are trying to make that whole like cycle of corporate profits going to donations and tracking all of it and all that. I know that's being worked on, but it's like that in of itself could have used a lot of transparency in this story that we're talking about with the exchange failing. Totally.
Which is just ironic, so, considering it's a, you know, a crypto exchange. You're like, how are these dots not connected? I don't understand.
So on this positive note, you know, John and Mike, you know, thanks for joining me today. This is a lot of fun. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Is there anything, you know, anything you'd like to leave us with, what you guys are working on, what people can look forward to and where everyone can find you and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I think we covered, you know, most of it. Nothing else that I wanted to dive in too much further, but definitely check us out. Spirit Punks on all platforms. We just launched the beta version of our marketplace with all these products on it. Spirit Punks holders get 35% off on all of those products. So that's kind of how some of these mechanisms will work that we're building. But working on some releases, you know, new releases here, like a full line of Bored Vodka, which will have a bunch of other Ape collaborators on it. Ape Strong Whiskey hopefully coming early next year as well. We should have, you know, we should be at a bunch of events in Miami. If you guys are out there, make sure to check us out. And then of course, if anyone has any questions, you know, beyond this, of anything else that we're working on or building, you know, we're always happy to chat. DMs are open.
Thanks awesome. So much, John, for having us on.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys. And have a great day.
Yeah, you as well. We'll talk soon. Cheers.